Hey, Dad.
What's up, Logan?
What kind of man was Boaz before he married Ruth?
A manly man.
He was ruthless.
Oh, I'm taking your lunch money.
But I don't have any.
Right, because I took it.
You're listening to The Wayward Willis with John and Logan, where two atheists discuss religion, culture, and maybe some politics. If you're offended by blasphemy, profanity, or you hate fun, this podcast may not be right for you. And now, on to the show.
Hey, you.
It's us.
Two guys who are almost always armed with several packages of peanut M&Ms.
I'm your offensive host, John.
And I'm Logan, a clinical expert in the field of nonsense and whimsy.
This week, we're wishing you a happy new year with a great goddamned season two. We're kicking it off by talking straight up blasphemy.
Isn't that... like, every week on this podcast, though?
Hey, Logan, look! Jingly keys!
Shit. I've been had. Anyway, so what even is blasphemy?
Well, the dictionary defines blasphemy as the act of insulting or showing contempt or lack of reverence for God. Basically, we're talking about being mean to the invisible friend of a gullible person who gets offended because a book told them the invisible man demands more respect than visible people, which, I would argue, are the only people who matter.
They're also the only people who are matter.
That was science-y. The concept of blasphemy presents big problems for everyone involved, and I'll tell you why.
I never doubted that you would.
Blasphemy is a particularly evil form of censorship. This amounts to limiting what you can and cannot say about a vague concept of a supernatural being, sometimes under penalty of imprisonment or death.
Though not in America, because freedom of speech, bitches. Or for now, at least, I guess.
Yeah. So consider what it would be like to live in an autocratic society where the name and reputation of the dear leader is considered so sacred that speaking the leader's name or criticizing them in any way gets you thrown in the dungeon or publicly flogged or both.
Are dungeons considered public? I'd say in a dungeon, your flogging audience would be pretty nebulous, and at that point, you're not even setting an example for the other citizens, you're just putting on a show for the rest of the prisoners.
It's a captive audience!
Though, I hadn't considered that order of events is a factor here, and you might have meant that the person got publicly flogged before they got thrown into a dungeon. Moving on.
Yeah. One of the hallmarks of Western civilization is the ability to speak one's mind and question authority. Though, since January of 2017, that's becoming tenuous.
Bum, bum.
We can see examples of societies in the world today where there is no freedom of speech or freedom of the press, and these are always unhealthy societies.
I don't know. I would argue that McDonald's is making us an even unhealthier society.
Yeah, but at least there's freedom of McDonald's or something.
Freedom of burgers, bitches!
Though, maybe that's just my bleeding heart liberal hippie opinion. I'm sure the Russian and North Korean journalists who have been poisoned had it coming, right?
Oh, totally.
So, when you're dealing with a power-hungry human autocrat, it's easy to see how they'd want to silence criticism and protect their grasp on the control levers.
They're all puppeteers pulling the strings.
Well, they're human, and they have limited power and limited time to accomplish their goals. They also have egos and feelings like the rest of us. No matter how much they try to convince people they're gods, they're really not.
Unless they actually are, and we're all just under some crazy mass delusion. Hold up a sec, I gotta go make a hat out of tinfoil.
What did I tell you about recording without a tinfoil hat?
To not to.
That's right. But I wonder why a god would care about what people say about him or her. We're talking about a timeless, spaceless, all-powerful, and all-knowing being. If you were all of those things, would you have any need for an ego? Would you really care what lesser beings say or think about you? I mean, a god getting angry about someone's words is like you crying for an entire day because you thought an ant looked at you funny. Do you really care how that ant feels about you? If not, why would you attempt in any way to limit how that ant behaves toward you? That wouldn't accomplish anything.
Actually, some would argue that God perceives humans as his children, and much like you don't like it when your kids talk mad trash about you to other people, he probably wouldn't like it so much either. Ergo, much like when you punished me for talking mad trash on you when I was a wee little lad, God might want to punish his quote-unquote children for the same thing.
Okay, I didn't punish you for talking mad trash on me. I punished you for doing things no sane person would ever consider doing, even after being told not to do them.
Objection.
Overruled.
Sustained. I hold myself in contempt.
So, second, it has been said that blasphemy is a victimless crime. And that's true, because if the person who incurred damages from blasphemy was truly hurt by it, then we'd be able to assess those damages and make restitution. However, since the person or persons offended by blasphemy are always an unrelated third party, it's very difficult to say how the target of blasphemy really feels about the entire situation to begin with.
That was only mildly confusing.
Okay, try to keep up.
I can't. I'm slow.
So this again shows a stark contrast between how we deal with harm against visible people versus invisible people.
Every day, thousands of invisible people are suffocated to death from visible people sitting on them. With just 3 easy payments of $9.99, you can help the Society for Invisible People's Rights and put an end to these senseless killings.
Patreon.com/wayward.
No, that's not where this was going. God damn.
No, but that's where they should give their $9.99.
Oh my gosh.
Do it.
I quit.
Most developed countries have laws around libel and or slander, so that when somebody says or writes something about a person that damages their reputation, we can assess the harm to that person and force the offender to make restitution directly to the person they hurt. There are a number of ways you can figure out how the person was hurt because people have relationships, businesses, and or celebrity, and oh yeah, they're people.
Just call the toll-free number on your screen right now and you'll be connected to a donation expert at the Society for Invisible People's Rights.
For as little as $1 per episode.
God damn it, no! Stop!
I'm a shameless shill!
Apparently. Fucking.
Well, you can't assess damages against an invisible friend, especially if the invisible friend is a perfect, omnipotent being. How would it even be possible to harm a god?
My money is on kryptonite.
Ooh. That's why nearly all developed countries do not have blasphemy laws.
Because of kryptonite?
Yeah, sure.
Nailed it.
Any penalties you enforce against blasphemers would be arbitrary and wouldn't in any way compensate the victim, who, as far as we can tell, has never even complained about being offended anyway. I mean, I'm a blasphemous motherfucker, and I've never heard any of the thousands of gods ask for an apology or hit me with a lightning bolt.
There's a first time for everything, you sack of shit.
Well, that is why I constantly have a grounding tether around my ankle. I am not taking any chances.
Well, that just makes you sound like a little pussy bitch.
You might be right.
Nailed it.
And that's another thing about blasphemy. If gods were truly offended and felt as strongly about it as their followers say they do, then why would humans and governments need to concern themselves with it at all? Blasphemy is a crime created by the gods, so it should be punished by the gods, right?
All rise for the honorable Judge Jesus.
Now everyone please join hands for the Lord's Prayer.
Oh God, not in my court. Not today.
Well, I'm sorry. If you're allowing Jesus to fill a judge seat, then you are going to have prayer in court.
I mean, he is the judge and the jury, but he's not my mom.
No, I'm your mom.
I mean, yeah. We're done.
So there would probably be a swift end to blasphemy if everyone who offended a god was immediately struck by lightning. I mean, the first time it happened, we'd probably be like, wow, what a coincidence that Jerry got hit by lightning right after he said, Jesus fucking Christ. Maybe the second time as well, but after it happened on a consistent basis, I think we'd all have to agree that God does not fuck around.
Except when he creates platypuses. And yes, that is the plural form of platypus, you naysaying listeners. You're welcome for the English lesson.
Thank you. But that's not how it works. The only thing that happens when you take a god's name in vain is that God's little sheep get butthurt. And that's it.
Ooh, maybe that's what the punishment is. God punishes his followers for not having a more solid reign on the heathens of the world. He hurts their butts in the hopes that they'll kick it up a notch and hurt our butts.
Well, they hurt my brain.
Wow.
So I think we should talk about why religious people get butthurt about blasphemy.
Oh, is butthurt the terminology we're sticking with?
Yeah, remember, God hurts his followers' butts for not keeping us in line.
Oh God, I regret my life choices now.
So it comes down to the religious person's degree of identification with their religion. The more their personal identity is defined by their religious identity, the more they'll be offended by what you say about their buddy.
Nobody gets to roast my buddies except for me.
Yeah, you know, growing up, my big sister would destroy another person for picking on me because she was the only one allowed to pick on me. I totally get it now.
Yeah, I still don't. Rude.
But after all, these people don't just think of God as a friend, but as their parent and their creator who loves them. I guess to them, it's a lot like having someone insult their mom or dad, who I need to point out are humans in the category of people who can be hurt. So it still makes a lot more sense to get angry about a yo mama joke than about someone saying your God is bullshit. But then if you believe that strongly in a God, you're obviously not as concerned with what makes sense as I would hope you'd be.
And on that note, yo mama's so fat, when she sits around the house, she sits around the house.
How dare you? You know my mom is a house.
Oh shit, you're right. I'm sorry. Might be.
In Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, the concept of blasphemy stems from one of the Ten Commandments. That is, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. The term in vain means to misuse the name of God, which is not God, by the way, or to slander him or swear on God when you intend to break your oath. So you can't say, God damn it, you can't say God is a petty little bitch, and you can't say, I swear to God it's true, when you're talking about how you had a 30-point hand in cribbage, because you're a liar and we all know it, Jerry.
Look, Dad, you've got to get past this. Jerry beat you fair and square. Embrace the skunking.
Liar!
Tisked.
Jewish custom dictates that speaking or writing the name of Yahweh or Jehovah or Adonai or whatever is dangerous because your use of his name could be misconstrued, or there could be something in your heart at the time you say or write it that makes it accidentally blasphemous.
Is accidental blasphemy punished with a lighter hand than intentional blasphemy? Do you have to take a lie detector test to determine whether or not you meant to blaspheme?
Nope. All blasphemy is blasphemy in the eyes of G-D.
Oh boy.
So even if you aren't blaspheming God by using his name, you could still be using it meaninglessly, in which case you're guilty of magical thought crimes. Because of this, Jews will typically write God as G-D and will completely avoid writing or saying any of the seven names for God they hold as sacred.
Well, if you think about it, this is sort of like reserved words when you're programming in C#. Maybe God just has a primitive framework.
Nerd. When you consider the implications here, you realize that they're worshiping a snowflake god who has such a fragile ego he can't even stand to have people say his name for fear of being triggered by what you might mean. None of this is okay, and I struggle to understand why a person would choose to worship a god who can't even hear you say his name without getting mad.
Or maybe it's out of respect for the other gods of other religions. They fear that if they use the incorrect name, then the other gods will get triggered and smite them where they stand.
That's true. Sometimes you have to hedge your bets.
Fucking nailed it.
Christians who have adopted the Jewish Ten Commandments as some sort of moral code don't take it quite as seriously as Jews. They're fine with using God's name, though again, they just call him God, which is not an actual name, in their conversations, sermons, prayers, and hymns.
And Christian rap songs.
Oof, they say way worse than God's name in their awful rap songs.
Indeed they do. Links in the description.
Oh my gosh. They still have prohibitions against using God's or Jesus' name as curses, but they will swear oaths on Bibles or on God in order to lend credibility to their statements or actions. Saying phrases like, "So help me God," is like virtue signaling to other believers.
Or as a way of making sure your kids know you're serious about turning the car around and not taking them to Chuck E. Cheese's if they don't stop fighting in the back seat.
Nobody should go to Chuck E. Cheese's anyway. It's an insane asylum. With pizza.
Delicious pizza.
Still insane.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Unlike Jews, Christians will sometimes exasperatedly say things like, "God give me strength," or "Jesus take the wheel," which would otherwise be considered blasphemy, even if it is sort of a prayer for assistance on the part of the believer. Also, Jews wouldn't give a shit if you misuse Jesus' name because they don't believe in him and don't particularly like the sequel to their book.
Authors just never know when to quit. Sometimes a good book doesn't need a sequel, Lois Lowry. The Giver did just fine on its own. Thank you very much.
That was oddly specific.
I am salty as fuck.
Christians have a convoluted history with recognition of free speech and the desire to not have their feelings hurt. Historically, there have been laws in majority Christian nations prohibiting any speech or writing that offends religious sensibilities. Even today, there are laws on the books in areas of Australia, Ireland, Germany, and other European countries that prescribe fines or jail time for publicly saying or writing things that are defamatory or offensive to people who practice religion. Because Christianity has had to adapt to more and more secular societies in order to survive, many Western governments have repealed blasphemy laws within the past several years.
Not to be confused with repealed, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to begin with. Once you peel something, there shouldn't be anything left for you to peel, so I just don't quite understand how something could be repealed. I guess maybe if you put the peel back on, but you would have to repeal it to get the peel back off again? Whatever, man. English has gone too far.
You have gone too far. Just dial it back, man.
I don't know how!
So Islam is, as expected, on the extreme end of the spectrum when it comes to blasphemy. In addition to the name of God, the names of prophets, as well as anything else considered sacred, are all off limits.
Oh, Muhammad, damn it. Son of an Adam. I swear to cow. Am I doing this right?
I think so.
That's my new favorite. I swear to cow.
I swear to cow. So even though the Quran follows the biblical line of prohibiting blasphemy without a specific punishment, Islam has additional texts called the Hadiths, which do at least outline punishments for blasphemy up to and including the death penalty. The really fucked up part of this doctrine is that it is assumed to apply not only to Muslims, but non-Muslims as well. Which means when a Danish cartoonist draws an irreverent picture of Muhammad, a devout fundamentalist Muslim could feel perfectly justified in murdering a newspaper office full of people because they were complicit in publishing said cartoon.
Oh my.
Dear G-D. This is obviously a very dangerous and radical interpretation of how a person should apply Islam to the society around them. But I didn't make up that example just now, so it's obviously a problem. In fact, if our podcast were bigger and extremists didn't like what we were saying about Allah and Muhammad, we could be victims of mob violence as well. So how do you feel about being a co-host on the show now?
Is it too late to cash out and run while I still can?
Well, I have a paperclip and some pocket lint for you.
I'll take it.
Muslim-majority countries like the Philippines, Egypt, and Afghanistan have blasphemy laws with punishments that range from 4 months and a day to being hanged.
Wait. Hanging people is still a punishment in some countries? Yikes.
That's not even the worst of it. In some countries, you can be buried up to your neck and killed by people throwing rocks at your head. Sadly, that's not a joke.
Isn't that just called getting stoned? Oh,
420.
Blaze it every day. potential employers. I do not smoke marijuana. Thank you.
Okay. In Pakistan, there are more people on death row for blasphemy than in any other country in the world. These people are Muslims and Christians and may be in prison for something as innocuous as liking or sharing something on Facebook that the government perceives as blasphemous. Like our podcast page, for instance, which everyone listening right now should like and share. Do it.
Oh, okay. Well, do it if you want to. We definitely don't condone peer pressure, especially if it's something that might get you killed.
But if it won't get you killed, then you have no excuse. Like, share, and rate.
Oh my God. What are you?
Help us out.
Oh God.
So Hinduism doesn't even have a concept of blasphemy. With as many gods as they have, it would be difficult to keep track of what you say and whether or not it's okay to say it, to be honest. That's why I think we should have more Hindu listeners, because they're less likely to get all offended by irreverent jokes.
Unlikely. You can get pretty offensive sometimes. You can't see it right now, but my face looks like the tongue sticking out emoji.
And my face looks like the angry cursing emoji.
That's pretty much what I envision on every single one of these episodes.
Okay.
That's your face.
Cool, I'm doing my job.
Permanently engraved into my brain.
Now, Buddhists don't have any gods, and so, predictably, don't have blasphemy laws. Even the precepts of Buddhism all pertain to physical and mental well-being and have nothing to do with any kind of supernatural reverence or divine law.
Though some might argue that at that point it would be blasphemous to insult your own body and or mind. No more standing in front of the mirror talking about how big your thighs are. You're beautiful in your own skin. Own it.
Okay, but my mind really should take my body to the gym this year. For real.
Okay, yeah. Well, good luck with your New Year's resolution, my friend. I give it 3 weeks tops.
I don't make resolutions. I'm just hoping for the best.
Are you praying? Thoughts and prayers.
Yeah, thoughts and prayers. Okay. So the concept of blasphemy is a transparent survival mechanism of supernatural beliefs. Since religions have no rational ground on which to stand, they take measures to suppress dissenting opinions and limit the amount of doubt in their followers' minds. Religious people also just want to feel more comfortable in their delusions and try to live in a world where offensive words and ideas don't exist. Unfortunately for them, people like us live alongside them, and we don't give a goddamn shit if their invisible friends are sad.
Although I had an invisible friend named Jonah once. I cared quite a bit about him. And if you care about the Jonas of the world, then call now to make a donation to the Society for Invisible People's Rights.
And you're not going to allow me to plug our Patreon page, right?
No, let me have this one, okay?
Fine.
Let me have it.
Before this week's interview, I want to offer a note on the content. We're discussing the history and impact of profanity, which includes discussion of homophobic and racial slurs. If you'd rather not listen, you can skip to the hour and 5 minute mark. In the interest of keeping this podcast as blasphemous as possible, we're bringing on a guest who's no stranger to vulgarity. He's the host of Very Bad Words and a dedicated researcher of all things offensive. We're talking to Matt Fidler. How the hell are you, Matt?
I am great. How are you?
I'm doing great, Logan.
I'm bad. I want to go home.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's your fault. You've only been talking for like less than 2 seconds and I'm already mad.
I understand. That happens to a lot of people.
Wow. Time to fix your life.
I made a lot of wrong choices.
Why do you care so much about bad words?
Well, God, I mean, don't we all love bad words, especially as little kids? And the whole sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me rhyme is I feel like one of our first lessons on language that we're given. And I don't know, maybe it kind of stuck with me a little bit. And then later in life, I became a huge Frank Zappa fan who loved to be profane and vulgar. And I mean, maybe it's because I grew up without religion, as you know, from a pretty secular kind of family. And so much of profanity and stuff comes from religion that it just seemed kind of silly to me. And like, really? These words are really that bad? Aren't words just ways of expressing yourselves? And how can words be bad without context? That was really the start. I think that was the big question. It's like, how can words just be bad in themselves? Like, yeah, sure. Saying hateful stuff and, you know, whatever, you know, I don't know, repeating Hitler speeches or something like that. Yeah, that's bad. But how could just words without context be bad? So that was kind of what started it, is that this is so strange. And I've worked in radio for a long time, and I'm often an engineer behind like a radio board. And I saw these words written down on every desk that I've been on, every, you know, mixing desk that's broadcast. And it has these words in front of them that say you have to bleep for. And they're shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, and tits. And they are exactly that order, which is the same order as the George Carlin bit of the 7 words you can never say on television. And
right.
So that kind of started one of the first episodes I researched that's out called WTF FCC, which is appropriate because of the whole FCC decisions made lately.
Right.
But that was my big influence. It's like, I just don't understand how language in itself without context can be bad, and so bad that there's laws around it and people get these huge fines. So I just wanted to look into it, and it actually, my opinions have changed about swearing a lot more. I kind of understand it's not going to stop me from swearing, but I don't know. I have been taught about, I don't know, my mom made sure I understood time and place. She is a professional swearer, but she was also a school teacher and a school administrator who had to give people detention for saying fucking shit. But but she understood time and place. And I think if anything, that what this show has taught me is that time and place and context really do matter. That maybe these words aren't super bad in themselves, but they can be used for bad.
Right. Okay. No. Well, that is a pretty awesome origin story.
But yeah. So that's kind of the origin story. I mean, there's a lot of different things about it, but yeah. So I don't know. Does that answer your question? What was the question?
Well, I'm actually curious now. So you said that you've kind of changed your mind a little bit about cuss words. Like, what has been one of those, like, the primary reasons behind that change of heart? I guess this is a complicated question for you.
Yeah. Well, actually, like the word cunt has become a word I really enjoy now because of the episode I did on that word and just kind of going into the history of it and the roots of what became the word cunt, I found really fascinating. And I don't, just kind of the origin story of that word led me to believe that words are bad for a lot of different reasons. And sometimes it's kind of oppressive reasons, and it's trying to change people's minds by what language we use, because the words we use do affect how we think about certain things. And so if you know, there's many words that mean the same thing, but we use different ones depending on, you know, the emotions behind those words. I think maybe a way to explain this is like, here's four words: member, Johnson, penis, dick. Okay, here are five words, and cock. And they all mean the same thing, but you're not going to use them in the same way necessarily. And people are really offended by the word cock and sometimes by dick. But you can use penis and member and Johnson in polite company if, you know, again, if there's context, if you're, you know, you can, of course, use it derogatory as well. But I mean, these words mean all the same thing, but there's like different amounts of emotion behind them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I think that those five words are actually a really good example of how, you know, the exact same thing can sort of change the meaning. And to be perfectly honest, I feel like as you went up that scale from member to cock, in my mind, that just keeps growing the size of it.
Oh, God. No, what just happened?
No, I think there's something
there. To me,
it
just seems like a size thing.
Size and maturity. Like, I was talking to a cousin about this, and she's like, you don't ever refer to a baby's cock.
Oh, God.
You know? Like, there's just something wrong about that. Like, that, it sounds like you're a pedophile or you're interested as in a sexual object, but you'll go, oh, you know, you're changing a diaper. It's like, all right, wipe the penis down real quick. And you could say things like that. And it's just like, you're just mentioning a, you know, part of the anatomy of your child compared to it, I don't know, maybe being more sexual or something. My cousin said, no, a cock is always hairy. That's what she pictured, is that a penis can mean is, yeah, more clinical and can mean anything you want it to be. But yeah, but a cock is just like, yeah, right, maybe it's bigger. I picture a porn star with a cock, you know? You don't refer to, I don't know, maybe people do, but you refer to Ron Jeremy's penis or his member. I don't know. I mean, maybe you do. But it seems like cock is just so much more brutal. It's just like, hardcore. It's like a weapon. And I think part of that is they all have these harsh sounding. They have the stop of air at the beginning. They have these hard K sounds.
It sounds like you mean it more when you say it.
Yeah. More emotion, and there's like subtext to it or something.
Yeah. No, I agree. But now that we've gotten our daily dose of cock,
welcome to the Wayward Willis.
I wanted to ask you just generally, your podcast does not shy away from tackling the most offensive words in any language, as you've just illustrated. But overall, how has your show been received?
I think people dig it. Yeah, I get a lot of positive email and Facebook messages and that kind of stuff. And people suggest other words that they'd like to see me covered. Or they tell me stories that illustrate something that maybe I talked about in an episode. Or sometimes they tell me stories that illustrate the opposite. But yeah, people, I mean, but I have gotten some, maybe there's been a few that I would call hate mail, but most of, I mean, a few people that are offended. The comedy episode that I did, which was my second episode, where I had comedians basically telling jokes that are too offensive for them to do in a nightclub. And they were pretty damn offensive. And they tended to go around slurs. And I think some people didn't like that I gave them a platform to say some of these things. The other one was swearing. And this one is tough for me. Although I've grown up secular, technically I'm Jewish because I'm Jewish on my mother's side. And there's a phrase in Dutch that translate, that is a fairly common phrase. I mean, it's insulting. So it's not like people say it on the street, but it's a common insult in Amsterdam to call someone a kankerjoot, which translates to cancer Jew.
Right. And yeah, I remember that one.
And I was kind of shocked and I laughed at it because I was like, oh my God, that's messed up. I tried to then explain it with narration about what was going on in these cultural contexts. And a few listeners didn't buy it. And they're like, well, God, their relatives were probably complicit in the Holocaust. And that may or may not be true. I don't know. But my point was not to offend Jewish people or to regulate or to normalize that kind of language. But this is a phrase that is out there in Dutch. Yeah, so I got a little bit of hate mail on that one too. But overall,
yeah,
people enjoy it.
So actually kind of piggybacking off of that, have you ever covered any cuss words in not necessarily different languages, but like in England, they have different things that they utilize as curse words like bollocks or something like that. Have you ever covered words that might not necessarily be considered curse words in certain cultures or languages, but are in others?
Not exactly yet. There's another podcast, another kind of linguistic podcast from a British woman that I met at a podcast conference recently. And we're talking about doing one about the difference between British and American swearing. I just put out a really short episode, a little bit about the Irish. But the cultural swearing is definitely there. I have the episode that I was just talking about with the Dutch. I had people from, I think that represented four different languages, and they tried to explain what their worst swear words were. And they all came to me and they thought that their native language was the best language to swear in. And so I invited them all over to kind of compete it and duke it out. And it got kind of silly and a little bit offensive. And I also did one on foreign languages. And that was the one that ended up being called the sacred and the profane, because all these different people I was talking to, it seemed that the religion was the central point of their swearing. A lot of it is because it was Italian, French Canadian, and Maltese. And so these are all Catholic countries. And they all had they just had a wide variety of ways that they swore around religious figures. And it was crazy because when you translate into English, we would never say any of these things. Some of them wouldn't make sense, and some of them would be so horribly offensive that an atheist or something would probably slap you for saying it. Like fucking Mary, Mother Mary's vagina was a Maltese. And it's like, whoa, like I'm not a religious person, but I would never say that even to another non-religious person, because that's just, it's so visual and so unnecessary. But it's powerful.
Right. Yeah. So speaking of that episode, that's the one that really made me want to get you on the show. And so when you were talking through that, I especially loved the explanation of the Italian porco dio.
No, I love that too.
Which is
porco dio.
It was hilarious. But I do feel like supernatural beliefs tend to ascribe power to words almost like they are magic incantations. By example, Muslims won't say Muhammad unless they follow it by peace be unto him. And Jews won't say or write the word God. They'll hyphenate it instead of writing out the whole word G-O-D for fear of blaspheming. So have you encountered other magic words, like just very special, these are absolutely sacred, nobody can misuse them type of words?
Well, kind of, but it's different now. I think those words that you mentioned are considered kind of magical just by tradition, but there is definitely a reason why that tradition started, and especially in the early days of Christianity and even the early days of Islam. You know, there's a lot of illiterate people. And if you go back even further, the majority of people were illiterate. And it was just, you know, the educated, who were usually some sort of priests or holy people or mystics. They were the ones that could read books and they could get information from the past while most people couldn't, and do things that they could pull up knowledge that has been erased. You know, every time there's especially a change in major religions, you know, kings try to erase the knowledge in the history from before this time. And this is why there are so many Christians that think the earth is only 3,000 years old or whatever the hell they think. It's because this is like very, you know, and every, you know, and the Greeks and the Romans did it before them, and the Egyptians did it before them, and on and on and on. And so then there's these certain people, just a few people that could pull from history, that would pull from prehistory. And these were the educated and the holy people. And maybe they knew how to, you know, do some sort of alchemy or pull up some sort of knowledge. And so these people were looked on as being kind of magic, and they were the wizards. And so people thought that these words were magical. And so that's kind of where the idea of these magic words come from. And then it also comes from the idea of profanity, which is taking holy words, holy texts, holy rituals outside of where they belong, which is the temple. And because, you know, profanity means literally outside of the temple. And so, you know, if you're using these holy traditions outside of the temple, that's evil. That's bad. That belongs in the sacred space. And so that's why there were words that were considered kind of magical and where these traditions came from. I don't know how many people actually believe, you know, how many Jews actually believe if saying God or writing down God, G-O-D, will actually, you know, damn their souls. I mean, maybe there's a lot of, you know, I'd imagine more modern Muslims wouldn't actually believe that using the word Muhammad without some sort of post text behind it is actually going to, you know, damn their souls. But I think it's then tradition. So that being said, I think there are those words now, and it depends again on where you are. As a white, you know, somewhat liberal person, for me, that would be like the N-word or maybe other slurs. I think that would be kind of the right. Holy grail. I don't know, maybe for evangelical Christians, maybe it would be happy holidays. You know, like that seems to piss them off a lot. So
yeah,
I don't know.
We'll get to that.
So I don't know if that's a real stretch as far as magic words go, but I think that's where it comes from. But I don't know if anyone really believes that anymore.
Okay. So I was going to bring up an example from my youth, because I was raised very fundamentalist Christian. And so when I was young, my religious parents would punish me if I used the word gosh or darn, you know, as replacements for God or damn. And that was always very odd to me because I'm like, they're not the same word. But have you come across people in your research while doing this show who view those replacements or other replacement words like that as genuine curse words?
Well, certainly one of my guest's parents believed that. He was a guest on an episode on swearing around your kids, and he got in trouble for saying the word fart, which seems just like a bodily function to me.
Oh, that was, yeah, another one for me. My mom hated the word butt. We could not use the word butt.
So, yeah, I mean, right, for me growing up, those were censored versions, and those were versions of things I could say at school. But yeah, it is kind of interesting. I don't know, in some way, I kind of agree with your parents. Like, and it goes back to that same thing of multiple meanings. If saying God or shit is bad, why not gosh and chucks if it means the same thing?
Right.
I mean, if the meaning is the same, why should a word be any worse? And so, yeah, in a way, there's...
Right, because, yeah, just like you were talking earlier is, you know, the context of the word and the usage of the word, not so much the word itself. So, yeah, I get what you're saying.
Right, like if you... I mean, I don't know if anyone's ever said this, but if you said to your parents, you're full of shucks...
Yeah, I don't think...
People would still be offended and go, that's not very cool.
Yeah, that's true. But, well, on the other end of that spectrum, atheists will use religious curses like goddamn because of their cultural effect, but it's not as though they attach special meaning or power to them. Sometimes it's just really fun to say. But do you find that non-religious people tend to curse more than religious people around the world, or is it kind of a mixed bag? Like maybe it depends on if they're in public or private.
Well, I'm sure it's a little bit of a mixed bag, but I do think non-religious people swear more. Not necessarily people who aren't affiliated with a religion, but I think, you know, I think we're going to find evangelicals swear much less than atheists. But I bet we'll also find that evangelicals swear much less than Catholics, because Catholics on a tendency, you know, Marco Rubio, you know, or not included. Maybe it's because it's a much older religion or something. So, you know, there's just a lot of people who are, you know, born in, and I feel like Jews are the same way. Again, maybe not, you know, Orthodox Jews. Orthodox Jews probably swear much more, but like Jews in my family swear a fucking lot. And this, you know, Irish friend who's from, you know, a hardcore Catholic background, he says fuck every sentence. But I don't necessarily consider him religious either, even though he considers himself a Catholic. He grew up in a Catholic country and, you know, and went to mass and confirmed and all that stuff. So, but yeah, I think people who are the true believers, I think they do swear less.
Okay. One of the things that I found about my very religious dad is that in public, he would not swear and obviously would come down on us for swearing. But in private, he kind of would do that, like you're speaking your sentence in a normal volume and then you say a swear word and then you just go on about your business.
Like you'd say it to yourself? What was the context of it?
No, he would just drop the volume a little. Like he would be like, well, I just don't know how the hell you were out there in left field or whatever. Huh. Like,
interesting.
It's odd. Like he would still say it and everyone, like you would, the people listening to him would know that he would say it. But if he dropped the volume of his voice, it like reduced the impact or something. And I wasn't really sure. The first time I encountered that,
he didn't want God to hear.
Oh,
no,
yeah,
honestly, though, that's probably. Well, and apparently he loses track of all of his followers, too. So. No, but that's one of the things that's always been pretty interesting to me about cuss words is how we, as a society, make them taboo for ourselves. I mean, they're just words and like they exist and some of them are even like in our dictionaries. But as a society, we have established to ourselves and to other people around us that they are bad, naughty words and that we shouldn't say them. And so we do all of these stupid things to like minimize the fact that we utilize them on a day-to-day basis, like dropping the sound of our voice or like kind of like bleeping ourselves out a little bit where they're like, oh, fuck, like that sort of thing.
Right.
What's the point of even like attempting to say the word if you're going to acknowledge the fact that it's like a bad thing that you shouldn't be saying? Like it seems almost counterintuitive to me.
Well, I think that's a great question because that's I think like that's a big picture kind of question that I'm going after that I feel like every episode addresses in some sort of way. And I think it's they're in those words are in your reserve tank. You know, they're not the words that you're constantly using, but they're there for when you really need power. And so, John, was it your dad that wouldn't you that would drop his voice, right? But he would still use the word because it was he needed to put emphasis using those words for some reason. But he knew that they were taboo. He knew that they were bad. And so I think he maybe, you know, if the word fuck has a power of 10 or the word hell has a power of 6, maybe it's a power of 8 for someone who's religious. Maybe making it quiet kind of just made it, you know, it brought it down to a 5 or a 6. And so it just wasn't quite as strong. He didn't want, you know, he wasn't damning anyone to hell with it, but he did want to make a stronger point than he could with non-foul language. And that's actually a good reason to not swear, because the more you swear, the less powerful it becomes. You know, like a lot of the words that we've used today would cause outrage 50, 60 years ago. Certainly a couple hundred years ago, we would probably be tied up to a stake and burnt or something. But now, because we use these words all right. the time and we watch Game of Thrones and whatever, South Park, they're a lot less powerful because we hear these words a lot more. And so when they're brought up, we don't go, we don't gasp like we used to. God, I remember when I was watching The Simpsons as a youth, as one does, and I heard Bart Simpson, this was obviously very early on, I think first or second season, and he said bitchin'. I thought that was crazy that I heard bitchin' from broadcast television. And now, but they wouldn't say right. bitch, but bitch would get bleeped at the time, you know, 1990 or whatever it was. But bitchin' got away. And then next thing you know, now you can say shit on broadcast television, if it's not during prime time. So it's just not as powerful anymore. And so, but if you reserve the power, then it's there when you want to use it, which is kind of interesting. Actually, there's an episode I'm doing working on the healing powers of swearing, because actually if you swear when you get hurt, it can actually release dopamine in your brain and it can actually help you deal with pain. But if you're someone who swears every other minute all the time, it's not going to be nearly as effective. But if you're like maybe your father and you never swear and you stub your toe and you yell out fuck really badly, that's actually really going to help you deal with your pain.
Right. Well, I find that anytime I hurt myself, I release a stream of words that George Carlin would be scratching his head at. But
but if you always use those words, that's if you true. Always used them like every, you know, every other sentence, then using them wouldn't be as bad. I mean, it wouldn't be as effective. And so it's sort of the same thing with emotional power. If like my Irish friend that says fuck all the time, it doesn't even sound like a swear word coming out of his mouth. And so if he yells fuck because he hits himself with a hammer, it's not going to be that effective. I'm hardly going to notice. I go, oh, hey, what's going on? Oh, I just chopped off my thumb and I yelled fuck and you didn't even notice. Oh, that's because you're always yelling fuck.
Right. Well, and I wonder also if, you know, the inflection and the power, like the actual wind power that you put into the word really kind of changes its effect and its usefulness as well. Because if I'm just talking to you and I'm just saying fucking sentences like this, then it's really not a big deal. But if I say that this recording is getting fucking out of hand, then, you know, because I changed my inflection, that word just kind of took on a different meaning.
That's completely true. And I think that's how you can make a swear word out of anything too.
That's what I was going to say. You can basically, like, the same can be said about anything. Like, if you just, you say, oh man, this shoe is really bothering me. But if you're like, this shoe is bothering me, like that makes a completely different sentence. And
the shoe, the second time you mentioned it, the shoe was much more evil that I had pictured in my head. The first time it was nice, a nice, comfortable tennis shoe. The next time it was like some steel-toed boot or something like that.
I agree.
Oh, man. But yeah, that's the interesting thing about it is that he's right. You can basically make a cuss word out of anything if you scream it loudly and with enough emphasis.
Yeah, and enough people kind of agree with you and take it.
Yeah.
If you ever watched the, you know, Chappelle show from back in the day, he talks about the word skeet, which I think is never taken real mainstream. I don't think it's been really accepted in the mainstream. It's basically meaning, you know, to come, to jizz. And he thought that was so funny that he could say that uncensored. Because I don't know if it was in like Dave Chappelle's comedy universe or whatever that it was, a widely used term, you know, kind of a derogatory term for ejaculating, but it hadn't hit the mainstream. So we, you know, a lot of us have said, what's that? And certainly the network censors didn't see it as anything. And so it wasn't a bad word to them.
Right.
Oh, ski, 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 ski.
Right. That was the first I'd ever heard that term. But maybe it just was, I wasn't hanging out with a bunch of comedians.
I mean, yeah, I think that I recall looking that up like a couple of weeks ago for the first time and seeing an Urban Dictionary entry and being like, what? No way. That can't be right. But yeah. It is, unfortunately.
Or think about, you know, even derogatory terms. Like, I mean, you know, when my dad was growing up, a black person liked to be called a colored person, or, you know, and now you say that and now it's a derogatory term. And so it's just, you know, the things always change with culture. Like, I'm working on an episode and not very far, so don't ask me anything specific about it, please. On the future of swear words and where cursing 200 years will be from now. You know, before people said fuck, people said swive, and you know, no one knows what swive is anymore.
And, I don't know, but I'm going to adopt it.
That's actually kind of funny that you say that, because I work with a guy who's pretty old, probably in his 60s or 70s, and he says mostly it's just like things that old people said back in the day, like fuck me running or off to the races. And one of the things that he says, like, he calls people snapperheads.
Snapperheads.
And the first time that I ever heard that, I was like, that has got to be some sort of derogatory term or something. But it's actually not. I looked it up and it's just like something about somebody being witty or something like that.
Snapperhead.
Yeah, but I was positive that was like racially charged or something. And I was like, what are you saying?
That's strange. I haven't heard that one. That's a new one to me.
Well, there you go. You're gonna have to do some research on that one for your show.
Burn a call.
Oh, that's what it is. It's somebody who's so annoying that you want to give them a quick snap to the head.
Okay. So someone who says snapper heads too much is being a snapper head.
Yeah, basically.
It's odd how that can just be turned right back around on you.
Like sesquipedalian. Sesquipedalian is a person who overuses big words.
Well, I find that there's quite a lot of floxinus and ihilipilification going on here.
Wow. Is that actually something?
Yes, that's a real word.
Whoa.
It's one of my new favorite words. And I believe, I'm probably going to get this wrong, but I believe it is to take something as trivial or unimportant.
Is regard to language?
No, just in general. Like, just in general. To perceive something as trivial or unimportant.
Well, can you say it one more time for me?
Floxinasa nihilipilification.
It sounds like pig Latin.
Well, it's actually kind of, I think it's a not really like a joke word. Like, it's a real word. It's in the dictionary. And the person who created it specifically for satirical purposes. But it's an actual word, and like all of the Latin roots and stuff all combined together to like sum up to that meaning. But that was the point of making that word, was like somewhat ironically to be like, oh, well, people perceive things as trivial or unimportant. So this word, most people are going to think is trivial or unimportant, but it actually has meaning and substance to it.
Which is that something is trivial or unimportant.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
It's a pretty ironic word.
Paradoxical.
Yeah.
But it's also longer than the word anti-disestablishmentarianism. By one letter.
So, well, that's a very bad word to spell.
It's tough, but I think I got it.
All right. So you actually had mentioned when we were talking about inflection and just the impact of words, and you had mentioned, you know, happy holidays can be a swear word and has in our evangelical culture in America. So I just feel like it's really odd that we can find such ridiculous things in our culture to be offended at.
Yeah, well, I think that was done pretty on purpose. And it's kind of I think that's a pretty purposeful kind of culture war kind of thing. Because I think, yeah, it seems kind of ridiculous. Because I think even if you do celebrate Christmas, I think having happy holidays said to you implies Christmas and New Year's. That's kind of what I always saw it as. But also, of course, the fact that not everyone's Christian who shops. So, you know, like even, you know, even people who don't celebrate any holidays have to shop occasionally in December. So, yeah, it's kind of a ridiculous thing. I don't know if it's really a swear word, but yeah, I mean, it's a taboo word, or it's a taboo phrase, I guess. But yeah, I don't think anyone's going to get busted for saying happy holidays in school. Unless they say it in a really sarcastic way to their principal at their evangelical private school or something like that. You know, maybe I bet if my parents sent me to some sort of super Christian high school, I could totally see get sent to the principal's office after telling a teacher happy holidays or something like that and just being kind of a brat about it. I could see that happening. But yeah, that's kind of, there's certainly something about the, you know, this culture war that is happening, that certain things politically correct, I think is kind of a taboo word or term too, you know, PC, and it can be used in kind of that way. Right. You could yell PC at someone without even having to explain what you mean. And it's basically just saying, you know, you're a pussy. You're not saying it how it is, whatever the hell that really means.
Snowflake.
Yeah. Snowflake. That's
yeah, snowflake.
Cuck. Oh man. I started looking up an episode on cuck. And it was just like, it's just kind of too disgusting to go into. I might do like a really short episode on it, but I didn't want to have to interview someone from the dark web about it.
That's like one of my favorite internet troll words to use.
Cuck.
I mean, it's it's definitely got some really sad and depressing roots, but it's really funny to me in a really sad kind of way when you're like playing a video game and somebody's like, ah, I just got cucked. Oh man.
It is interesting how the gamer community has seemed to come up with a lot of these phrases. And maybe it's because it's shorthand and it's really easy to talk to each other that way when you're, you know, you're whatever doing an online first person shooter kind of game and you're collaborating. I guess maybe you need to talk quickly or something like that. I haven't gotten deep into that world, but
it's mostly just because the gaming community is toxic as a whole. Like every game you play, it doesn't matter if it's a first person shooter or not. If somebody disagrees with you even a little or just wants to be a shit stirrer, then they will have no qualms busting out all sorts of crazy things to call you or to say to you to put you down.
Yeah, like the most horrible things. And I just don't understand it. Like as soon as you join a game lobby, newbie, you have people typing just the worst things into the chat. Really,
just because they don't you're not one of them and they see you and you're not.
No.
Is that what it is?
No. No, yeah, some people just play games to troll people and grief them. And like unfortunately, one of the golden standards is just a lot of really homophobic terminology. Like the number of times that I've been called a fag while I've been playing League of Legends is just too many to count.
It's because of the anonymous nature of it all.
I mean, yeah, and it's just like
24/7
cyberbullying on steroids.
Right. And these are probably the kids that were getting bullied in real life in school a lot. And now they can be anonymous, safe behind their computer. And now they can let it all out, dish it out, what they kind of took in when they were younger, maybe. That's kind of my little bit of a theory.
That's very likely.
Yeah. But some of the language coming out of there is, really misogynist, really homophobic. And and then combine it with violence or something, you know? Yeah, it's pretty ugly. And I didn't really like going down. I started, going on 8chan and some of that stuff, kind of looking into words like cuck and stuff. And I'm just like, this is depressing me and it's making me feel worse about the world. I could go back for working for the news if I wanted that.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes it's really hard to keep your hope in humanity.
That's why I like the George Carlin words are a little more fun. Although we are going to delve into some racial slurs. And some, my producer Jill has been working on bitch and whore. And I have another producer that I used to work with. I used to work for WNYC Public Radio. And so I have some producer friends out there and one is working on the N-word. She's a black woman. And so like, I'm just going to kind of like let her handle it. And I'm just going to be a person to ask questions. And I think it's important for slurs and that kind of stuff. I did the same thing with the word cunt. Cause it's just sort of like, wow, this is like, especially Americans. That's like kind of like one of the worst words. And so I think you got to be delicate about this stuff. At the same time, not afraid to ask the questions because, that's, I figure if you're listening to my show, you're prepared to hear some stuff that might offend you a little bit or, might shock you just a little bit. I mean, I try not to make it, I don't think my show is vulgar or anything like that. But yeah, as you stated, I don't stray away from any of the words.
Right. No, but I think that it's, when you're listening to it with the knowledge that it is a study, that it is a dive into the etymology of these words and the history of these words and the usage of these words, you're talking about the word. You're not ascribing it to a person. You're not, using it in order to hurt a person. You're just talking about, the word, defining the word. And I do think that it's important to be able to talk about that. It's important to be able to do that and analyze it without the baggage that comes with just hearing the word. Because again, that's giving it more power than it should have as just a word.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it can be difficult, though, to separate the baggage from the word, even if you're not using it in a derogatory way. I had a Facebook commenter write me recently, and I think I included it on a mini episode that I did, that was talking about how some person did a study that said basically how the words, even without context and without kind of malicious intent, they can still be a little bit traumatic, especially if they're kind of words of abuse that are even just said around someone who has been abused by those words. Like the word fag or faggot, right. That's what I think they're responding to. By a gay person that's maybe been beat up and called those things while they're being beaten up. They're saying that raises anxiety levels and that kind of thing, even if we're just kind of talking about it in an abstract way. So it can be difficult. And that's where I think the idea of, trigger words and that kind of stuff, which is something I kind of generally feel like, oh, really trigger words. But I'm middle class, straight, white dude that has not really been on the end, the other end of a fist beating me up because of who I am. I can't right. fully understand what that's like to have those kind of words being used, being weaponized. And so, yeah, there's always that, oh, words are just words, but well, words have meanings. And I don't know, I don't want to make this a political thing, but I mean, I think about, and as someone who has worked in news departments and seen hardworking journalists do their thing and is as good as they possibly can for very little money, maybe I should do an episode on fake news.
Right.
Because I think those words have really hurt it. Like, oh, that is inaccurate and needs a correction. That should be the right. That should be what a politician says when there's something they disagree with or think is inaccurate. Why don't we look into that? Is there any fact checking? What's your source? It's like, that would be a good way to disagree with an article. Right. Instead, you say fake news, meaning there is no truth. Only believe what I say. I am now the god of what is right and wrong. Believe no one but you and me. And, you know, that's how dictatorships start.
Right.
I didn't mean to go off on that tangent, but I think, but words have power. And I think that's kind of what I said at the beginning of our interview about how my mind has been changed a little bit about this. I realized that words, we have words for a meaning and, you know, for a reason. They have meanings. They're to, you know, communicate something, and they can change, words can change the way we think.
Agreed. Yeah. So and I think that when you mentioned all of our favorite little poem, the Sticks and Stones poem, is that it's not necessarily true. And there are a lot of things that can happen in a person's life to make associations with specific words, like you said, that re-traumatize them, hearing them. And in that case, it's kind of incumbent upon us to be sensitive to those people's experiences. And
Yeah. So that's what I try to do when covering these kinds of things, especially the slurs that we're going to approach it. I didn't feel like I needed to be very careful when covering the word shit. I didn't feel like I needed to be that careful with covering asshole or fuck.
Right.
Even though those are powerful words that can be used in hateful, horrible ways, it's not degrading a very person's being like I think the slurs can. People who are on the receiving end of a slur, it puts into doubt their humanity by calling someone a bitch or a whore or the N-word or a whatever. And so that's the kind of, that's right. the difference. And it's a fine line we're treading. Okay.
Well, and then, you know, there are obviously instances where people who have very strong religious beliefs associate their entire identity with those religious beliefs. And when you're in a culture where the majority of people in power feel that way, then you get things like blasphemy laws. And all around the world, there are places with blasphemy laws that can carry sentences as light as a slap on the wrist or as heavy as the death penalty. So, you know, obviously in a secular country like America, we want to be able to be free to just, you know, say or critique whatever we want, but other cultures don't feel that way. So do you think that the counter for these laws would be more blaspheming to kind of lessen the impact, or just compliance and kind of
That's a good question. I mean, I think unfortunately, if you're in a country without protected speech or freedom of religion, I mean, it's a choice. Are you going to, you know, be a martyr and sacrifice yourself and go to jail to try to make a point and change the opinions? Or are you going to step in line, or are you going to try to immigrate somewhere else?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, in this country, because we do have protected speech and freedom of religion, we can go out and we can say that, because there are, I wouldn't be surprised if there were some blasphemy laws in local jurisdictions in this country. Maybe they're not enforced.
I just saw one. I saw an example of one from New Hampshire that was 1767, I believe it was, and has since been repealed. But it was essentially saying that it was, you know, punishable by imprisonment for offending religious teachings or whatever the wording was. But yeah, in New Hampshire. So, you know, prior to the Constitution, we actually did have those things in this country.
We had sodomy laws until very recently, and it seems to go against freedom of expression.
Right.
But yeah, God, I have no idea how to, you know, I'm not an activist or anything, so I have no idea how to counter that. I'm thankful that I don't have to do that.
Right.
We could say a lot about Western civilization. We could critique a lot of things about Western civilization, but that's what I'm pretty proud of, the freedom of speech and religious expression. But yeah, God, I have no idea. I think if we wanted to get rid of, actually had a, you asked me about angry emails or how people are responding, but I think it was slightly facetious. It's hard to tell tone of email sometimes, but he said, how dare you say it's okay for children to swear all the time. If we're swearing all the time, it's going to lose its impact. And then it's then when I say fuck, it's not going to be as powerful. And I said, you're absolutely correct. And the more we use this, the less powerful it is when we do use them. So if we just want to, take away the power of those words, use them more and more and more. And then ironically, when you try to stop people from saying them, they become more powerful.
Well, you know, anytime that you make something taboo, it becomes more desirable.
Yeah, both of those sides would be most likely, you know, both the leaders or whatever that make these laws, that these blasphemy laws, and the people trying to fight them by blaspheming more, they're both being counterproductive, because one is making, you know, the people who don't want the word around are making it more powerful, and the people who maybe do want the word that are using it more are making it less powerful, perhaps.
Right. Well, I mean, in certain ways, I would say that just stripping a word, especially a blasphemous word, of its power would be productive from an activist standpoint.
But the problem is that profanity doesn't have to necessarily have context so much. Like, that's kind of what profanity is holy words taken out of context. I did an episode. I think it's on the Sacred and the Profane episode, when I talked to the French Canadian guy that talks about how the words tabernacle, which means tabernacle, saying that outside of the church is worse than saying fuck in Quebec or, you know, French Canada. So that's profanity. But blasphemy seems to have, if you look up the etymology of it, it has more of a malicious intent. The roots of blasphemy actually come from meaning speaking evil, speaking slander, or speaking lightly of sacred things, compared to just being out of context with his profanity. So blasphemy is kind of like this next level of profanity. It's like, yeah, you're talking about holy things outside of its context, but you're also being malicious about it. So it's targeted. I think just repeating blasphemy over and over is not necessarily going to get rid of its power. It's, you know, you're still kind of damning or speaking ill of someone's sacred beliefs. Where, like, something like shit and maybe other words like that, especially that are not malicious, I think those can have the power taken away more easily. And I feel like actually blasphemy is getting worse again, too, especially with kind of this religious, I don't know, this kind of holy war we seem to be in Western society between very religious people and very secular people. I'm actually a little more cautious about using religious swearing than I once was because of that.
Well, that's...
I know. I love saying Jesus Christ. Like, that's my grandfather used to only holy swear. I never heard him say shit or fuck, but I hear him say Jesus Christ was his favorite, or you know, damn or hell. He loved those words, and they seemed mellower to me and not as harsh as shit and fuck. And I used to say them all the time, and people started calling me for being blasphemous. And I'm like, I didn't really think about it that way, because again, I was raised in a secular house that, you know, I didn't really go to church, and, so I didn't think about those things as being kind of your question about using these holy words or atheists using, you know, profanity and stuff. It didn't seem like profanity or blasphemy to me, because it didn't go against my beliefs. And so, as I become a little more sensitive to that.
You know what's funny to me? Mm-hmm. As we're talking about blasphemy, it's occurring to me that that can be described as using sacred words in a fox and os annihilapilificacious manner.
Oh my gosh.
That might be in the dictionary that way.
Okay. That seems like the perfect jumping off point. Oh, man. All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Matt. I really enjoy your podcast. And are there some other sites or social media links that we should include listeners to
I'm
find
on Twitter
you?
At Dirty Words Cast, which would be the more difficult way to find me, because I didn't get very bad words as a handle for Twitter. So it's at Dirty Words Cast. I'm on there a fair amount, and I always respond myself. But yeah, Facebook, you know, verybadwords.com. Yeah, help me spread the word. I want to get more listeners involved with the show, because they come with these great stories, and I've actually been spending some time doing some Skype conversations with listeners who have stories, because there's always, I love to do a show where I have kind of a big concept, but then have a lot of little personal stories in it. And so the more people listening means the more people calling and telling me their personal stories about swearing. So yeah. Check out the show, and I'd love to hear from you.
All right. We'll absolutely put some links in the show notes and hopefully drive some more listeners to you.
Thank
I think
you so
that
much.
They would
really
enjoy
talking
it.
To you, John and Logan.
We'll make sure to actually put them in the show notes instead of just saying that we will.
it was one time.
That's all it takes. It's time for a brand new segment that's going to be my personal favorite, and that's the part where I educate Dad about things that he doesn't know anything about because he's a scrub and doesn't pay attention to pop culture things.
You don't know me like that.
I do. I've literally told you to watch Rick and Morty so many times, it's unbelievable.
That's going to have to be a whole other episode when we talk about that.
Yeah, it is. When you fucking watch it, which apparently is going to be never. Jesus. All right. So anyway, ironically enough, even though this segment from now and moving forward is going to be about pop culture, this particular episode is about something that's probably not totally mainstream, but that's okay. So, for those of you who don't know, my dad is a big grumpy old man, and he's pretty terrible about new age video games because he can't handle more than 6 buttons on a controller.
Why do you need more than 6 buttons? You only have 5 fingers.
You just don't understand. There's so many more things you can do with more buttons.
You only have 2 thumbs.
You can only map so many keys. All right, that's beside the point. Anyway, going along with that theme, he has a really terrible opinion of VR.
VR is a gimmick.
It's not a gimmick. It's fantastic. And it's going to be the mainstream way to play video games here pretty soon. It's going to be the new standard, I promise.
If you enjoy playing your video games in the swimming pool with goggles and a snorkel.
That's not... No, you're so grumpy. Get over yourself.
Get off my lawn.
All right. So I, on the other hand, am obviously addicted to video games, and VR is my second home outside of real life, because nothing is better than a virtual world where you cannot worry about paying taxes and going to work.
Wait, are you dissing on Animal Crossing because you have to do things for people?
See, funnily enough, I wasn't, but I feel like that speaks volumes about how boring of a game Animal Crossing is.
Oh, no. I feel like what you're saying is I'm boring for liking a game like that.
I mean, that's arguably true, but you would have been boring no matter what, so.
Oh, my God. Okay, moving on.
Oh, shit. Rooster. So I love VR, and what we will be discussing today is one of those VR games. Yay, VR. Yay.
Woo.
Woohoo.
You can tell how excited I am.
Yeah, not at all, because you're a sarcastic piece of shit.
I'm practically peeing my pants with excitement.
Yeah, that's a lie, you jerk. All right, so let's get down to the nitty gritty. The game that we are talking about is Duck Season.
Wabbit Season.
No, stop it. We're not doing that bit again. We already did it once.
So tell us, Logan, what is Duck Season?
So Duck Season is a VR game that is essentially like kind of like a reboot of Duck Hunt from that was like NES, like straight up NES, right?
Yeah, that was my neighborhood.
Good boy. Yeah, so Duck Hunt, but instead of shooting at pixels on a screen, actually you play the role of a kid whose mom rents him a one-day rental of the game cartridge Duck Season. And plot-wise, the kid is, like, shooting at the screen with a little, like, gun. What was the original Duck Hunt? It was, like, the gun was reading the pixels that you shot at with, like, infrared beams or something?
Yeah. So when you had CRT TVs, the screen setup would scan the entire screen, but it would do it pixel by pixel from top to bottom.
Yeah.
So the lens on the Nintendo gun controller would actually read the screen, and then the center point where the gun was pointed would be the pixel that the game registered for interaction.
So like super old school technology.
Yeah, because once you got LCDs and HDTVs, the gun no longer works. Rip in pepperoni NES gun.
Yeah, it's a sad day. But in the game, that's what's technically happening is the kid is basically playing. It's essentially Duck Hunt. But what you end up doing is being the person inside of the game in the TV shooting at ducks.
So he is controlling you.
Technically, but you're controlling him who is controlling you, but you're whatever.
Okay, this just got weird.
You're basically puppeteering yourself is essentially what's happening.
Okay, so you are playing the hunter in the game.
Yes.
And the kid is playing the game.
Yes.
So he's controlling you, but you're really controlling you. So yeah. The kid is irrelevant.
I mean, the kid is important to the plot, but...
Well, it seems like this kid would be having an existential crisis at this point.
No, God damn it. No. So the kid is just super stoked to be able to play this game because apparently he's been wanting to play it for a long time.
And his mom finally rented it for him, but it's a one-day rental. So he has to crank out as much playtime as he possibly can in the 24 hours that he has the game. So anyway, you play the hunter in the game, and it's like super HD graphics. I don't know. I think that's actually like one of the selling points of the game is that they refer to it as like Duck Hunt with better graphics or something like that. But the dog in the original Duck Hunt game is in this game, but instead of being a dog, he's a dude in a dog mascot costume.
Creepy.
Yes, it is super, super creepy. And the vibe that you get from it straight, like right off the bat, is like Five Nights at Freddy's kind of creepy vibes.
Okay, so I do have to tell you that I did a little bit of prep work for this segment, and I looked up an article and a review on this game.
Uh-huh.
And at first I was like, okay, this has to be a review for the wrong game because what I'm looking at is Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah, so that's like the kind of vibe that you get from this game. It's not really like, well, I guess it is a little bit kind of jump scares once you get later on into it, but for the most part, it's just like a really creepy atmosphere. Like, you know, something like some crazy shit's going to go down, but you're not sure exactly what and when, and it's just kind of terrifying. That's kind of the scary vibes that you get from this game. So yeah, like right off the bat, you see this like Five Nights at Freddy's-esque dude in a mascot costume, and I don't know if it does it like on the first round of Duck Hunt that you play, but at least for sure on the second round and then all of the rounds after that, when you first encounter him, he's like, he's got his back turned to you and he's very obviously smoking a cigarette, and then he like turns and he sees you and he like does a little like, oh shit, and he like turns back and like takes one last puff of his cigarette and then throws it on the ground and stomps on it, and then he turns around and he's like, hey, do 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 do. He doesn't actually say anything this entire game, but that's like the gist of it because you can't see what I'm doing.
So it's an implied, hey, do 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 do.
Yes, it's an, it that's exactly what it is.
Okay, so you just have to kind of use your imagination.
Yes, pretty much. But okay. Because of the fact that you have to use your imagination, it almost makes it even more creepy because he doesn't say anything. He's just a mute dude in a mascot costume. Anyway, so yeah, after he puts out a cigarette, this little target board like pops up on the screen and it says like, round one, get ready. And then you shoot at it. And keep in mind that since this is VR, like you actually have to hold the shotgun like you would hold a shotgun in real life. And you have to pump it to reload it. And you actually have to like get shells and shove them into the chamber. So it's actually kind of complicated. And there's a lot of stuff that you have to keep track of. And you have finite ammunition in your gun. Like you have infinite ammunition that you can keep reloading into it. But you can only have up to 5 shells in your shotgun at once. So you have to keep reloading. And if you're really terrible at shooting, then you also have to reload while there are still ducks flying around in the sky. It's actually pretty intensive. Like the duck hunt aspect of it by itself is pretty worth it just to like play by itself. But anyway, you play through the first 3 rounds and everything's fine. Super kosher aside from this creepy dude in a dog mascot costume. It's actually kind of enjoyable and you're like, okay, that was cool. And keep in mind that this is like, going into this game, I didn't have a preconceived knowledge about what this was going to be like. I knew that there were going to be some creepy aspects of it because of like one of the gameplay trailers that I watched, which I kind of wish that I wouldn't have now that I've played through it. So I didn't think that it was going to be like super creepy or that there was going to be any weird stuff going on. So in the beginning, you play through the Duck Hunt round and then you come out of the TV and you're back in the kid's body and you can like look around in the living room and interact with stuff. There's like magazines that you can pick up and look at. There's also like video cassettes that you can put in the VCR and watch them. I think they're just like YouTube videos that they pulled off that are actually pretty funny. And like some of them are stuff that they made specifically for the game. I didn't watch all of the cassette tapes, so I'm not exactly sure.
Okay. Well, I mean, I can understand that. It's just a real big hassle to have to rewind after you watch it.
Oh, absolutely.
So what you're saying is this game is made for people like not you who grew up with
yeah, literally
retro VHS technology.
This is the game for you because you get to go back in time and play around with VHS tapes and the NES.
Well, I mean, I play my NES anyway.
Okay, well, shut up.
Okay, moving on.
And there are also other game cartridges too, and you can play little mini games. I didn't actually play any of the mini games. I probably should have, and we'll talk about why, but there's a whole lot of reason to go back and play it again, so I'm probably going to do that. So yeah, you basically just like can waste as much time as you want, like in the house, chilling in the living room. You can like turn around and watch whatever your mom is doing. Sometimes she's like at the computer doing work. Sometimes she's like cooking dinner, whatever. Mom things, you know, just mom things.
Okay.
But yeah, then whenever you're ready, you pop the cartridge back in and you go on to the next level. And this is, all right, so this is where my experience with the game is going to be slightly limited because this is a game that, depending on how you play through it, has, I think the total was 7 different endings. And those endings can be dramatically different. Like if you just play through the entire game and you don't do anything different and you don't find any Easter eggs and you just play Duck Hunt basically the entire game, then at the end of the game, supposedly your mom just like puts you down to bed and gives you a kiss goodnight. And I think right before she leaves the room, she says something along the lines of, if I were you, I would have shot that silly dog. Ha ha ha.
Okay.
That's supposed to be like foreshadowing for the next ending, which is the one that I played through because I didn't realize that there were multiple endings when I first played through it. And so I thought that that was the only ending. And I was like, oh shit, that was crazy. And then I put the game down and I thought I was done with it. But boy, okay, was I wrong.
You didn't realize that your mom in this game is just a sadistic person who likes to shoot puppies.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I didn't know that about my mom in this game.
Or in real life.
Let's not talk about that. That's too real. That's the wrong reality. I don't like that reality.
All right.
So anyway, yeah. So technically, that's how you're supposed to play. You're just supposed to shoot ducks the entire time. And then when you go to bed, your mom says that and you're supposed to be like, oh, wait. And then you're supposed to play back through it and shoot at the dog while you're in the game. And when you do that, there's just like this little pixely effect, like the dog doesn't actually like die or get hurt or anything. And like he'll like get shoved backwards, but then he'll like immediately like ragdoll back to where he was originally standing and like wag his finger at you. And there's a little trumpet sound that's like, wah, wah, wah. That happens every time you shoot at him. I basically, the entire time that I played through it, because I knew that there was supposed to be something creepy about the dog, like every time I got finished shooting all the ducks in a round, I shot at the dog. And that's what happened every single time. It didn't ever change, even as you progress through the game. And then between the levels, when you go back into the living room, stuff starts to get moved around. Like stuff in the living room will get moved. And at one point, as you transition between the levels, you look at the screen where you're supposed to be seeing stuff from the game, and you see a live stream of yourself in the living room.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And like you move around and you can see that you're moving around. So you know that it's like live, like somebody is actually recording you with a camera right now. And if you figure out where the camera angle is coming from and you turn to look at it, you see the dog guy outside on your patio holding a video camera.
Oh,
yeah. And that's the moment where I like a little bit shit my pants. I was like, oh, okay, things just got creepy.
Okay.
And then he like runs off to the right and disappears. And that's all the creepy stuff that happens for that part.
But was he smoking?
No. But he was creepily recording you with a camera. Like, I feel like that's enough.
But I mean, you had your clothes on, right?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, that's less creepy.
Well, I don't know. I guess I don't know little kids' lives. Maybe they sit in the living room naked and play video games.
You know what? Some do.
My bad. So anyway, you play through the next level and you come back out and there's like this line of cassette tapes leading toward the NES. Like all of the tapes have been lined up like dominoes, basically. And at the end of one of them, there's a cassette tape that's like kind of red. Like it almost looks like it's been stained with blood or something. And it's got just the number 12 on it. Oh, sorry. Back up. Before that happens and before the video camera happens, there's this news story that pops up on the TV. And this newscaster is talking about how there are 12 families in the local area who have gone missing. And they still have no idea why, basically, is the gist of the news story that he's telling. And so you see this cassette tape and it has the number 12 on it. And I didn't even realize that this was happening. I completely skipped over this part. I thought that it was just like an interlude where there was nothing happening. But supposedly you put the tape in and it shows like a POV camera of the dog guy going into some kid's house who's playing Duck Season and straight up killing him.
Oh, it's enough food.
Basically. Yeah. So that's, I think apparently that's what's supposed to happen. So that happens. And then another one of the interludes, your mom is in the kitchen and she's like, honey, have you seen the big knife? And she like kind of rambles for like however long you stay outside of the game, basically. And she's like, if you see the knife, let me know, basically, is the gist of what she's saying. Like, I have lost the giant butcher knife in the kitchen. I don't know where it went. And it's kind of alarming. But if you find it, keep me posted.
Okay, but like when you go back into the room, the knife doesn't close the door and is like, hi, I'm Mr. Knifey. Let's play.
Oh, what?
I don't know.
No.
I was just wondering where this game was going.
No, I'm getting there, but that's a terrible guess. You're
no
terrible.
Mr. Knifey?
No Mr. Knifey.
That Mr. Stabby?
You're the worst.
Okay, go ahead.
So anyway, yeah, so you go back in, and when you come back out, it's like completely pitch black in the house. And you turn and you're like looking around because you know that there's something that's going to happen. And when you turn and face the kitchen completely, one single light comes on and your mom is lying dead on the floor, covered in blood in this giant pool. And
that's disgusting. What kind of games are you playing?
Oh my God. What is wrong with you?
No, what is wrong with you, sir?
I didn't know what this game was going to be. You know what? I don't have to explain myself to you. Fuck you. So anyway, your mom is dead on the floor I don't think much else happens at that point.
Yeah. So you're like, oh shit, my mom's dead. And then you just sit back down and start playing the game again.
That sounds like it might be wrong, but I think that literally is what happened.
Oh, that's no, a no, very no. unconcerned no, no, no. child.
Sorry, no, that, okay, that is not what happened. You turn back and you see that your mom's dead, and then you turn back to face the TV, and it's like the regular screen between levels that's like, go on to the next round, blurp, 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 blurp. But instead of that, it's like all cracked and gross looking and like bloody, and instead in like all caps and like fucked up letters, it says, come face me or something like that.
Hmm.
So you go back in and it's the same level, but it's like dark and dingy and like things are rusted and broken down and on fire and everything is just like terrible looking. And then the dog is coming at you and he's like throwing flaming ducks at you or something like that.
Oh
yeah. You shoot him enough times and eventually he falls into the water and he turns into like this giant Hulk version of the dog.
Oh, so he's like one of those little sponge animals inside the pills that you drop in the bathtub. Like once they get wet, they grow like 10 times their size.
Oh, yeah, sure. That's what he is.
Okay, Sponge Dog.
So Sponge Dog turns into giant Hulk Dog. And he like has laser beams for eyes or something. And you have to like shoot at his eyes. And when you shoot his eyes enough, then he goes down for real. And then you hop back out of the game and into the living room again. And everything is pitch black. And I think even the light that was like lighting where your mom was dead is also off. And okay. You see a flashlight on the ground and you pick it up and you like turn him and you look. And I think he can spawn in three different places. But the place that he spawned in for me was the bathroom. And like the bathroom door flies open and he's coming straight at you with a kitchen knife. And the gun that you're holding to like shoot at the CRT TV now is like got this weird electricity stuff all over it. And when you shoot it, instead of like shooting nothing, like an IR beam at the TV, it shoots like this little glitchy electricity ball thing out. And okay. If your reaction time is fast enough, you can shoot the dog enough times that you can actually kill him.
Okay.
And that's the ending that I got, is I killed the dog.
The important part is he found the knife.
Oh my God. I'm pretty sure that he found the knife before then. So that's the ending that I got. I killed the dog. And then the kid like rushes over to his mom. And then he like picks up the phone and he calls the police. And he's like, police, my mom. And then he like realizes that the dog's body disappeared. And he's like, shit. And he hangs up the phone. He doesn't say shit, but he hangs up the phone. And the police are like, hello, hello, can we help you? And then he hangs up the phone and he drags his mom's body out to the backyard and he buries it.
What the fuck?
He packs his bag full of stuff, he puts it on his back, and he just like walks off into the sunset. Well, it was dark outside, so the moon set. I don't fucking know. Anyway, yeah, he just walks off into the distance. He runs away from home with his dead mom half buried in the backyard. And that's when the credits start rolling. And I was like, holy shit, what the fuck? Keep in mind that at this point, I didn't realize there were multiple endings, and I thought that was just it. I thought that was the one ending, and that was the game. And I was just like, holy shit, that was intense. I was not expecting any of this. But it turns out that there's another ending where the dog actually does kill you. Like I said, there's seven different endings, and there's so many Easter eggs in that game, and I have yet to experience all of it. But the summation of all of those things, like all the Easter eggs and all the different endings, you essentially find out that the guy in the dog costume, that it's your dad. And I think that there's like some actual explanation behind it, but there's just like a bunch of different things that add up to that conclusion. That's like actual lore for sure. That is what the case is. But why your dad is like trapped in the game cartridge or something like that, I think that there's some deeper lore there that hasn't fully been explained yet.
Okay, well, there's a fan theory that your dad is a grumpy old man who doesn't like Rick and Morty and won't watch it. And he got so grumpy that he got sucked into his Nintendo while he was playing one night and became a serial killer.
Yeah.
That's my fan theory.
Yeah, it seems legit and totally plausible.
Okay. Well, hey, you should come over tonight. I got a game that you should play.
Oh, okay. Totally. I'm on it.
Got some VHS tapes.
Is your butcher knife missing?
Oh, I haven't seen my butcher knife. Where is that?
Oh, man. No, but yeah, apparently there's not even like none of the stuff that happens in the interludes happens if you're not already on the track for the dog murderer ending. Like there's apparently all kinds of different endings. Like one of them results in like the dog mascot getting shot down by like a SWAT helicopter or something. I'm not entirely sure what the case is there, but
well, I mean, he is trying to kill people, so
yeah. Apparently the dog serial killer ending only happens if you shoot at the dog in the game. all of those things that added up to that ending, like the news story, the number 12 tape, the butcher knife going missing, like all that stuff is specifically tied to that ending.
Okay, but at no point does Hotch from Criminal Minds bust down the door and save you from the serial killer dog, right?
No, but that would be totally legit, and I think they should do a crossover episode.
That would be a hell of a crossover. Need to get Shamar Moore in there, man.
Oh, fuck yeah. I love that
fucking
guy.
Badass. So, Logan, this sounds like an incredibly dark and immoral game. So what did we learn from this game?
We learned that you probably shouldn't shoot at things that you shouldn't be shooting at. We learned gun safety. That was the important moral of the story. Oh,
okay, so we learned gun safety and we learned stay in your lane, bro.
And we learned that if a serial killer is going to be hunting you down, make sure that you're armed and ready to fight back. And if somebody is standing outside on your patio recording you, you probably shouldn't just let it fly and go back to playing video games.
Yeah, you might want to, at the very least, just let your mom know that someone was standing outside the house videotaping you playing video games in your living room naked.
Especially if... No, nobody was naked.
Oh. No, sorry.
And honestly, I probably need to play through all of the endings to find out what all of the morals are. But I think that actually I missed this part of the game theory. There is one of the Easter eggs. You find this note that when you translate it, it basically says bad dad, bad kid. And I think that's like a code for something else, like one of the other Easter eggs you can encounter.
Well, see, this actually sounds like it's setting up a sequel to me. Bad dad being the killer in the dog costume and bad kid being you who will take after your dad when you pack up all of your things, leaving your mom buried in the backyard and walk off. It's like an origin story.
Maybe, I guess. I don't know.
So we're not going to get the sequel, Mom Season. Like, he just goes on a rampage across the country killing moms.
That could be the implied sequel. I don't know if that'll be a playable game.
All right, so if you had to give this game a rating of one duck egg to a stack of canned dog food.
Oh, hold on. I'm going to modify that scale, because one of the funniest things is that that magazine, like there's an entire magazine series that your mom collects, I guess, and you find them scattered all over the living room. They're called Maligned Mom.
Oh, nice.
The Maligned Mom magazine. So yeah, on a scale of one duck egg to a stack of Maligned Mom magazines, I'm going to give it a snuff film cassette tape.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
In this case, it's probably a good thing.
Okay.
And that's your daily dose of pop culture.
All right. Thanks for sharing.
That does it for this week. We wouldn't be able to keep doing this without you, the listeners, and our wonderful patrons who support us. That would be Gaytheist, Lisa McLean, Holly Vane, and Sarah Talk Podcast. Thank you all so much. Until next week, if you have questions or comments, or you're mad at Logan for talking about video games, please send us an email to podcast@waywardwillis.com. Intro music was provided by Austin Cologne and used with permission. You can find more of Austin's music linked in the show notes. This podcast is a media production of Willisware, LLC. All rights reserved.
This has been The Wayward Willis. If you liked what you just heard and you want more of John and Logan, you can follow us on Twitter @WaywardWillis, Facebook @facebook.com/TheWaywardWillis, or at WillisWeb.com. If you want to help the show and have a few extra dollars, you can donate per episode or per month on Patreon at patreon.com/wayward. We'll be back next week.